Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotura, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And it's an exciting day here. It's cold and wet in downtown Seattle. We're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society in the Hotel Andre, 4th and Virginia downtown. You can hear some people have joined us. They purchased tickets at hotstovesociety.com for $15, which comes with breakfast and coffee.
Best bargain for breakfast anywhere in the city.
Well,
we think very highly of ourselves.
Yes,
here.
We do.
Hey, you know what? You start high, you never know.
We have a very large show. We're here for 2 hours. We are here Saturdays and Sundays, sometimes Sunday evenings also, but you can always stream us. We talk food and wine and beer and all sorts of things related to making yourself sated.
That's right. Delicious sated. Things.
And I will say, last week, I did get some feedback from KDO that her friends were offended by my bacon and crab latkes. And you know what I got to say about that?
What?
Get a life. Is what you're going to say.
So sensitive.
That's what he was going to say.
These guys.
I also had lots of feedback at the Cookbook Social. Some of you, our listeners, came to the Cookbook Social.
That's right.
And that people liked that segment, KDO.
Okay.
So just saying.
You can let it go at this point.
Okay.
All right. You also got so much feedback on our Facebook page about that.
Oh, Sarah, what was the feedback?
So much.
Oh, yeah?
Someone actually said that they had tested all of the different kinds of fats when making latkes, and that duck fat was significantly better than bacon fat.
Oh, good.
Yeah, okay. I would believe that. Kosher.
What else did we hear?
About the latkes in particular?
Yeah.
A lot of eye rolling.
A lot of eye rolling. Emojis?
We
had emojis?
Yeah. A lot of oy vey's.
Oy vey's.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
See, I don't fabricate these things, Tom. I just bring you facts.
Yeah.
True facts.
I would apologize, but I said right on the show that I'm agnostic when it comes to food, so there's no...
Yes, you're very multi-culti.
Yes, yes, exactly. We're just going to move on.
Yes, please.
Hanukkah is over. I have next year to look forward to. Mm-hmm. We're learning how to taste wines blind with Chateau St. Michel's educator, Linda Chauncey. She'll be with us. We're going to share our tips and tricks on cooking a delicious piece of fish. You would hate to cook a non-delicious piece of fish.
That would be depressing.
And of course, and if you have a piece of bad fish, you can't do anything to it that's going to make it better. I'll just say that right now.
Spoiler alert.
And of course, we'll go toe-to-toe on food trivia. And I believe that we have Brittany Bartleben couldn't be here today in the Baker's Corner, so we have a surprise trivia contestant.
Really? Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Mr. Gameron, yeah. He doesn't know this yet, but he's going to be a surprise contestant.
I think he's going to be very good at it.
Let's jump into ordinary to extraordinary.
Uh-huh. This is where you take some ordinary dishes and you make them extraordinary because you two are the professionals, and if you can't make it extraordinary, then who can? Terry laughs. Okay.
Yeah. I think
probably
some
everybody
people can
is.
That own a dish. That's the ones where I find that they become a little bit more extraordinary when people have a confidence about a dish that they own personally. They think they make it the best, so they probably do.
Yeah.
Well, then which one of you really owns hot buttered rum?
Me.
You?
You ever make hot buttered rum mix?
Never. So that's going to be very simple. How would you make it simple? Fantastic.
To me, you make it fantastic by doing your butter and your sugar and your vanilla bean, you got to scrape all the little seeds out of the pod.
Yeah.
And you, instead of adding cream, you add ice cream. And there's a fluffiness about the ice cream that when you mix it all together and you put it back in the freezer or in the fridge, and it separates a little bit when you're making the hot buttered rum so that you get a little bit of that butter sheen off the ice cream. And it's lovely. It's delicious.
So why is it called hot buttered rum? I thought it was hot dish. I mean,
No. It's a cup with a scoop of your mix in it, and then you pour the rum. You stir the mix into the rum, and then you pour hot water in on top. And that's the hot buttered rum. So it's like a Irish coffee, but it's a hot buttered rum.
I think I'm going to try one of those one of these days.
It's very true to its name.
Yes.
Warmed up butter and rum.
I'm
with
much
some
more
water.
Into the mulled wine kind of idea.
Yeah, well, not me.
Let's talk about that, Thierry. How would you make an extraordinary mulled wine?
Well, I like mulled wine with a lot of savory in it. So I like bay leaf, put in your wine, bay leaf, thyme, cracked peppercorn, little toasted coriander, and really bring that to a boil very quickly, like just a couple of minutes. So you can actually get the fresh flavor from those spices. Mm-hmm. And then I strain that, cool it down, because I don't like mulled wine that's hot. Because that's actually gross. It makes me like gag.
Mm-hmm.
I like to cool it down, and I like to blend just like a slushy. Just put that in a Vitamix blender, and put that with a couple of ice cube. Make almost like a mini slushy, and then serve that just like that.
Dude, this is, you're in the middle of winter. That's what mulled wine is all about. You're going to make a slushy?
Yeah.
He is unapologetic.
And you put,
are funny people.
And you put your hot buttered rum in the fridge.
They don't like ice in anything except if it's winter.
And you put your hot buttered rum in the fridge, right?
Well, that's where you have to keep it, or else it goes bad on the counter, dude. Just saying.
Yeah,
don't you think the French are funny people? They hate ice. And yet this young man right here across from me is going to make iced mulled wine.
I don't want to...
Because I like the slushy part.
I don't want to paint the whole French population.
Yeah, exactly.
With serious proclivities for making mulled wine.
Okay, what's next?
Okay. Can we agree on an extraordinary gingerbread?
Mmm. Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
You think so?
I'm going to make some glaze cara oranges in a little syrup of sugar. Cook that very slowly for a very, very long time until they're totally almost gummy kind of idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you cool them off, they become crunchy a little bit. And you put that right on top of your gingerbread. And that's, you chop it down and put that on your gingerbread. It's delicious.
Are they cara cara supremes? Or are you taking the whole orange and chopping it up?
No, the whole orange. The whole orange slice across.
With the rind.
Thin as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Cook it very slowly with a little piece of parchment paper on top. But cook it slowly so, you know, it takes 2-3 hours to cook very slowly. So they become totally tender, and you put that on, you chop it and put that on top of your gingerbread.
Mm-hmm. Sounds
ginger
delicious.
And orange.
I'm a fresh ginger person. I'm not a candied ginger person. For some reason, it's like preserved lemons to me. I just don't like them very much.
You don't like preserved
lemons?
I just don't like that flavor very much.
Man.
And the same thing goes for me with candied ginger.
Mm-hmm.
I like fresh ginger, like, you know, fresh ginger juice and fresh ginger pulp and all that sort of thing.
It's a huge difference between candied ginger and fresh.
It is. It's
young
very,
ginger,
very much so.
Yeah.
And also dried powder too, which is the third ginger you can get out there.
Exactly.
On the market.
And that's another whole different thing. Mm-hmm. That kind of goes into a warm spice powder, more of a like a five spicer. That's where you find that powdered ginger for me. But fresh ginger is the bomb, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm into it. I agree with you on that one.
Okay, Sean, how are we doing on time? He says wrap it up. All right, that means we get to your questions when we come back here on Cairo News Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the Seattle kitchen on Cairo Radio. Coming to you from the Hot Stove Society. And we have the chef in the chapeau. We have Katie O. And I'm Tom Douglas. And Esther from our audience wants to build on something you talked about in the last segment, Mr. Terry.
Go ahead, Esther. What's your question?
Hi. I'm just curious. What wine would you use to make a mulled wine?
So when I use savory wine...
Can we be clear? She wants to know what wine would you use to make an iced slushy...
mulled wine.
Slushy mulled wine. Just saying.
You're never going to live this down,
Whether you're serving it cold or hot, I would use a Pinot Noir. It's my favorite grape to use in terms of the flavor of the grape itself. It's my favorite to use for... that kind of combination.
Mm-hmm.
Better than Merlot, which would be, once you cook it down, it's a little bit sweeter. I like the Pinot Noir idea of just the spice in the Pinot Noir help making it better to drink.
I was surprised when you said that you cooked it for, boiled it for 2 or 3 minutes. That was a surprise to me, too, because I've always just heated it up. But I don't care for mulled wine, so maybe I'm just doing it wrong. I never brought it to a boil.
A good bowl of mulled wine is served warm. Not cold like I do.
I understand, but I've never boiled. You said you boiled it for 2 or 3 minutes on the spices.
2 minutes, so the spices can...
And I've never done that.
Yeah.
I've toasted the spices before I've made it, but I've never actually brought the wine to a boil, just kind of heated it up. Okay, Katie O.
All right. We went to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, and we asked you if you had any questions. And, of course, you did. So the first question comes from Brian Cunningham, and he wants to know from you two, what do you do this time of year when all the wonderful fresh summer produce is gone? Root crops can only go so far, he says.
Oh, that is not... There is so many roots up there. I mean,
so many roots.
I mean,
don't get sick of them.
So many root vegetables.
Yeah, if you're sick of root crops by November, December, you're in serious trouble.
Yeah, because how much longer do we have of root crops?
Five more months.
We just started. I think salsify, you could diversify a little bit and go into roots that are a little bit less common, like salsify, which is basically, I think it's called the oyster plant in English, right?
Mm-hmm.
So long... carrot-looking-like thing root, black on the outside. You peel it off, and then it's white on the inside. And I think it's a beautiful, delicious, sweet kind of flavor, almost like Jerusalem artichoke, which are also another tuberous you can use, another root vegetable you can use in the winter. I think most people, when they shop at the market and they see things like Jerusalem artichoke or celery root or things like this, they look at it as, where, what planet is this vegetable coming from? Because it looks kind of odd. But all you have to get over is the idea that it's an odd-looking vegetable and just peel it.
Yeah.
And once you peel it, you get the flavor of what you're looking for. And you can make wonderful soup, wonderful roasted vegetable. I mean, Jerusalem artichoke roasted is delicious.
Yeah.
Not, you hate them?
Not my salsify. I thought you were going to go down that and continue
salsify,
that path.
Salsify.
It gets milky when you peel it, right? And, but I love that vegetable, and it's not used
and
very
much. And it's an easy one to make with, let's say, a rice. Like if you were to do a rice pilaf, for example, onions, butter, onions, rice, and then you do your salsify on the side in a nice little chicken stock and creamy sauce, and you put the whole thing together. Ooh, man. That's delicious.
So, yeah, that's what I think Terry's made a good point. I think it would be a fun time to explore yams, too.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about yams lately.
Well, it's the time of year, right? Yeah. So it's time to go down to the International District and buy some real yams and play around with them next to sweet potatoes and all the different varieties and finally teach yourself the difference. I could use a little lesson myself.
I've also seen a lot of beautiful chicories still kind of everywhere. And that's a nice way to get away from the roasted root vegetable flavor and making delicious chicory salads.
And you know who does it? What we don't use enough is cabbage.
Yeah.
It's a great time of year for fresh cabbage.
Big fan.
And I think about one of my favorite ways that I had cabbage over the years, or kind of made me fall in love with it, because I only had it boiled in kind of New England boiled dinner when I was growing up. But down in the market at Saigon Over the Counter, when they used to have a side vegetable with your ginger chicken or something, it was always cabbage and carrots and dressed with dill and fish sauce.
Really?
I love that combination.
So were they cooked? They were not raw. They were
cooked? They were cooked. Yeah. Dill and fish sauce. It was really good.
I've got both of those in my fridge. I've never thought of putting them in my cabbage.
Yeah. It's good combo.
Hot tip. All right. Matt Farr wants to know, why is meringue the actual least good part of a meringue pie? Also the hardest part to make. Anyone?
That's just because he's a hater to egg white.
Oh, you think so? Matt's a hater, egg white hater.
I think meringue is just an added touch where the sugar is very highly prominent, and that's what makes the meringue pie, the lemon pie, so delicious, because you get that nice lemony acid from the bottom part of the pie, and you get the sweet parts from the meringue. So I think it's a yin-yang kind of combination that works pretty well.
There you go.
Well, Matt?
Matt, get over it.
I guess we're not feeling very
Matt,
sympathetic to your
Matt,
meringue feelings.
When you're eating a lemon meringue pie, if you don't like the meringue, I'm sure someone next to you will gladly take it.
I like meringue. And my favorite kind of meringue is the floating island meringues, where you poach them a little bit and put them with some delicious
caramel-flavored
creme anglaise of some sort. You know, drizzle a little caramel over top. But I do agree with Matt that it is the least delicious part of a lemon meringue pie.
Yeah, it's egg white.
In my opinion.
But that's not saying much, because the lemon meringue pie is very delicious.
It's more about
the
look and feel.
And you could also spiff up your meringue by adding some, since you're just whipping egg white with sugar. In most cases, you could add it some lemon zest. You could add in some citrus. You could even put a little powdered chocolate in there if you wanted to. So just play with it.
Okay. This next question comes from Barbara, and she would like to know, I recently got carried away with making preserved lemons. Other than Moroccan chicken tagines, could you give me your favorite ideas so I can use up my stash? Although I don't feel like Tom, you're going to really participate.
I'll leave this for Terry.
Yeah.
I would use it on lamb. Get a leg of lamb, boned out, butterfly it as maybe an inch and a half thick, the entire thing, and then rub that entire preserved lemon on there and throw that on the barbecue. You're going to have a wonderful piece of lamb that's going to have that gorgeous preserved lemon flavor inside of the meat. It's going to be delicious.
So I would say, if you're going to do that, I would take that preserved lemon and actually puree it with just a touch of olive oil so that you can brush it on. Because if you do that in the beginning, it's going to disappear. You want to do that on your last baste right before your service. So maybe you only cook it 5 more minutes.
Yes. So it doesn't become bitter. And
it doesn't disappear.
It doesn't fall in between the grates of your barbecue.
All right. We have enough time for, I think, this last question from Rita. What would be a good Christmas Eve cocktail? I know you both are drinking on Christmas Eve.
Oh, everyone does a mulled slushy.
Oh, I just can't wait to sink my straw into that one.
You know, just go outside, get a little snow off the ground, and make a mulled snow cone.
Exactly.
Why not?
Christmas Eve cocktail, boy, you just can't go wrong with a glass of sparkling wine. I made a little cranberry fizz for my satellite media tour last week, and that's just taking fresh cranberries and simple syrup. So simple syrup is 50% water, 50% sugar, mm-hmm. and put the cranberries in and just let them sit after, you know, just got them up to a simmer, and then boom, turn it off and let it sit. Strain it out in a beautiful cranberry-colored simple syrup, basically. Mm-hmm. And then I added a little cranberry bitters and poured the sparkling wine right on top. It happened to be Domaine St. Michel. It was delicious. And boom, cranberry fizz, Christmas Eve. All right, we're going to take a test that is with Linda Chauncey of St. Michel. She's here to tell us how and why it comes in handy to be able to taste blind for the holiday season. Maybe we'll save you some cash on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. Tom Douglas.
Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
And Katie O.
We're here at the Hot Stove Society. Please, come join us. We have some very nice folks in the audience, and we try not to make fun of them too often.
Though we do, once in a while.
Yeah. But no, not badly.
Just don't make fun of the guest, right?
Linda Chauncey is here. That's the voice you're hearing right there. Linda Chauncey of St. Michel Wine Estates. And you are the educator out at St. Michel. You're the one who...
That I am.
Do you teach internally and externally?
I do, Tom, yes. Mm-hmm. But my primary job is creating these integrative and interactive experiences for our guests who mm-hmm. come. And, of course, we have our tasting bar and our tours. But these winery experiences are for those people who want to do a bit of a deeper dive and learn a little bit more about wine or just have a lot of fun.
One of the greatest ways to experience Chateau Saint-Michel is to go for a wine tasting during a concert night for a band you really want to go watch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Terry, yes, you got that right. And so now you got to come back because, you know, for our 50th birthday, we expanded our tasting room. We added all these 5 tasting salons, a 75-seat mm-hmm. theater where our guests can, you know, engage in all these winery experiences.
I think there's some simple steps you can take to take some of the nervousness, I will say, out of wine. Katie just said she saw this little tasting thing set up. It made her a little bit nervous. People get nervous around wine, unlike they do around beer, say, right?
I agree.
Because they're not really sure always what to do. So let's go through this quickly.
Sure.
And we've all got 5 glasses, including one of them is a champagne-style glass.
Well, right now, Tom, what we're talking about is one of our key experiences that our guests really love, mm-hmm. and it's called Sensory Sojourn. The idea here is that you learn how to identify aromas and tastes. And so what we have in front of you first is an aromatic, a food-grade aromatic in that first glass where under the coaster number 1. So go ahead, bring that to your nose really slowly and see if you get an idea what it is. And then when you're done, go ahead and put the coaster back on. So we don't want the room to be too aromatic with that. Mm. Do you have it, Katie?
So I'm testing, I'm smelling a little berry, like a strawberry kind of idea.
Well,
That would be no.
Wait a second.
There's no wrong answers here, Terry.
I shouldn't have asked you if you had anything because you're going to influence each other. So really, just mm-hmm. go ahead. What you need to do is taste the wine behind it because that aromatic is the dominant aromatic in the wine behind it. So we want you to see if by tasting the wine, you can better discover what that aromatic is.
Pear.
Ooh, you're getting closer.
Pear, I'm getting pear now.
Yeah, it's a stone fruit. So go ahead, give it a taste.
It is
a stone
fruit.
And, you know, Tom did.
Pear is not a stone fruit, is it?
Okay, so I have to say this.
Apricots.
So, okay. And women actually are better at identifying aromas. Women of all ages. And Katie just nailed it.
Mm.
It's peach. But what is the wine behind it? What is that variety? Now, when you do Sensory Sojourn at the Chateau, there will be 7 varieties. But what is that one?
If I had to guess, it's Sauvignon Blanc. I don't know.
Is it the acidity?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's the un-oaked quality.
Thierry?
Yes. It's a little bit sweeter than the Sauvignon Blanc.
So it's Riesling?
Yeah. I would say Riesling or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Katie?
I'm going to go with Riesling.
It's Riesling. This is our Eroica Riesling, our joint venture.
Oh, I've had that so many times.
With Dr. Lozen. And you got it, Thierry. By the way, you get points for guessing apricot. So, Eroica.
I get points for apricots?
You get that. And you know what's wonderful about
zero.
This? Just that.
Are you very competitive around here. So.
So we love this because I think this is really great with food or just to sip it.
Yeah.
Really refreshing. Okay, ready for number two? Because you're going to want to cleanse your palate.
I think it's very important to tell the audience that this is a fun thing to do. Not there is no uptightness here. I don't.
What do you mean? You just said you were up 1-0.
What? That's only because you're there.
There are winners and losers in this game.
Exactly. I've never known you to be
competitive. So just so you know, we have, like I said in the beginning, we have five glasses. The two that we're working on are just literally wine glasses with a little white piece of paper covering whatever that sensory note that you are trying to hide from us visually,
That's
but
right.
not through our nose.
That's right.
All right, so now we're going to number two?
Yes, let's go to number two.
Okay.
You should know this.
Chocolate and vanilla.
Oh, Thierry. He's always trying to spoil the game for everybody.
Wait, I was supposed to tell
Thierry,
you?
Thierry. Okay, that's fine. I just wanted Tom to have a chance without being influenced by you.
Black licorice. No, just kidding. It smells more like milk chocolate than dark chocolate to me.
I would agree.
Yeah.
We get a lot of Nutella. Mm-hmm. Nutella guests.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So, try the wine in the back.
Okay, so if you're listening, now we got a little quarter full glass of red wine.
Right.
Which is probably the correct amount when you're tasting wine, right? You don't only want to fill your glass too full.
Right. So, you know, here's the deal. 90% of what we taste is actually smell. So your ability to smell these aromatics is really great. And, you know, in addition to identifying the aromas, we also think it really enhances people's appreciation if you taste in a certain way.
But so it's also where people get freaked out when they read wine tasting notes. And
completely.
Oh, my God. There's like, I was just reading some about in Seattle Times this weekend about the Costco wine selection. And there was some, you know, tasting notes. And that guy was, he used the entire Webster's Dictionary to describe one glass of wine. That's how I think wines get in trouble sometimes.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tom, I'm glad you bring that up because, you know, at the winery, we kind of want to meet the guest where they're at. Mm-hmm. If you're there to learn a lot, we can geek it up with you. Mm-hmm. If you're there just to have a great time with your friends, we're there for you, too.
And that's kind of what Starbucks is headed to also in teaching people about coffee up there at the roastery is like, you know, just expanding that experience if that's what you're
interested in. No blackberry in there? Let's get back to the red wine. Okay. Here.
Yes, yes.
You're trying to drink
but
more.
But did you also recognize that little bit of chocolate, which, of course, comes from the oak? Yes. Thierry's nodding and said yes.
Very prominent.
So Thierry's 2-for-2.
Good.
He's very smart.
Yeah.
He likes
wine. So congratulations.
I love wine.
What is the now, here, what's the variety? Taste again.
Oh, boy. Tom, do you want to try to redeem?
I wouldn't have a clue. I mean, it doesn't taste like Pinot to me, but...
Mm-mm. If it's a Pinot, it's not well made of a Pinot. It's too big.
It's too dark.
Much bigger.
Right. It is a cab. It is a cab. This is our Cold Creek Vineyard.
Ooh, love that.
Cabernet. Thank you, Terry. Yeah,
I've had that many times.
The vineyards. Then. Thank you. This is, you know, the vineyards are 45 years old. Mm-hmm. And so it's really exciting to have the concentration that comes from those older, smaller grapes. And you get it. It delivers a lot of bang, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful wine. You can store that or you can drink it. It's
absolutely.
Definitely a big wine. It's definitely delicious.
I like this game.
Yeah,
I'm impressed
with you guys. Yeah, you have to come to the chateau and do all seven wines.
So if you go past a certain amount of wine, you have to spit every time you taste, right? Because
Thierry, there are no rules. But if you would like to focus, it might be a good idea.
You guys do bed and breakfast.
That's
so
next.
Tell people that's an okay thing to do, and why that you choose to spit.
Yes, and you know. Very simply, your ability to discern tastes and flavors is really a function of what's going on in your head and your ability to focus. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if we drink every sip, we're going to lose that ability to focus. So, but here's the good news. For those who actually don't do so well, take heart, because we have evidence that if an aroma is very important to you, you will develop olfactory receptors.
Yeah, and I totally agree, 100%. There is no right or wrong. It's yes. what you like.
I love that.
Ultimately,
Terry.
You got to drink the wine and you got to go, ah, I love this. Or go, no, I don't actually like this.
That's right.
Regardless of the score, this is what kind of, you know, reading about, you know, an encyclopedia about a one single wine is not for beginners, for sure.
Yes.
Because you're not going to make any sense out of it. It's going to be too scary.
That's why we just suggest.
Just like food, it's meant to be enjoyed.
Yes, and I think we do too much about food and wine pairing. I mean, we all know yeah. that there are these incredible quintessential experiences you can have. But the bottom line is this. I know a lot of people who drink only red wine, and they don't care about pairing. They're going to drink the red wine, and they mm-hmm. darn well should. Mm. So
we have one last wine we're tasting, the St.
Yes.
Michel Domaine Brut.
Yes, it's the Brut Rosé. Rosé is such a hot category. Mm-hmm. And our Brut, it's lovely and dry, gorgeous color. And it's made with the best method to make a sparkling wine, Method Champenoise.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and what's the grape in here?
We have both Pinot Meunier as well as Pinot Noir.
Mm,
so using traditional French grapes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we actually have other experiences at the winery. One is champagne and sparkling literacy, where you get to go through food pairings, understand the different methods with which to make wine. We also have Blend, our flagship experience, where you get to be a winemaker for a day blending some 5 classic Bordeaux varieties, keep the recipe on file, take your bottle home. And if you're really challenged with picking wines, please come to the winery, and we'd love to be able to taste you on some wines, meet up with an expert who can help you pick just what you need. And there are gift certificates if you're feeling like you're blanking out, right?
Holiday fun.
And happy 50th anniversary.
Oh, thank you, Terry.
So, Linda's been, you've been around this Seattle wine and food scene for a very long time. It's great to see you. I want to check in with Linda, go out to St. Michel Wine Estates out there in Woodinville. Up next, something tastes fishy in here, and it's not the wine, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's time for Something Fishy in Here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hey, I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in hat.
And I'm Katie O. And we are going to do this segment on fish because, as we do, we get questions from our listeners. And we actually had one from Emily. And it went a little something like this. What's an easy way to remove scales from fresh fish? Then we got another question from Pam wanting to know, if we were hosting a 7 fishes meal for Christmas, what would we do that doesn't take a Culinary Institute of America degree?
if you don't want to get a graduated in seafood, I would stay away from 7 fishes in one meal.
it's actually pretty next level, but
yeah, it's actually not true, really. I mean, because it's Italian, it's a derivative from an Italian feast,
mm-hmm.
and they cook very simply, and it's just like that. So let's start with the first one first.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, chef, that to get the scales off, you have to go against the scale pattern.
Correct.
And then I would also say getting them off the fish is fairly simple. Getting them out of your kitchen is another story.
Yeah, I hope you have a deep sink.
Well, not just a deep sink, but they fly everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's something to possibly think about doing, maybe put out newspaper and do it on your picnic table outside or something like that. But it does. They do splatter around. And you can't even see them. You'll find them on your skin and stuff later. Once they dry, you'll start, what is that? You think you have dry skin, but it's a scale that attaches itself to you.
Scaly
so,
skin.
I would take it outside onto a picnic table, newspaper down, and then from the head, you want to go, is it opposite from the head,
right?
Yeah,
you want to start from the tail, actually.
You want to start from the tail. It's opposite from the tail. And just scrape towards the head. And if you don't have a fish scaler, you just use a blade of a knife. But that's how you do it, and
Use a big knife. Use a knife that is very easily controllable.
Mm-hmm.
So small to medium size. And then don't put the blade too much in a flat angle. Make sure your angle is a little bit slightly up so you're not, mm-hmm. you know, going into the fish, the skin of the fish. You don't want to break that skin.
Right.
Start gentle, and then if you're afraid of the scale flying everywhere, take a big one piece of parchment paper, like a size of a sheet pan kind of idea, cookie sheet, put that over your hand. It's not going to make any weights, change anything, but it will allow the scale to not fly everywhere.
Okay. So as far as the Feast of the Seven Fishes, it literally is any fish you can think of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can either put it out in courses, or you could put it out as a buffet and have all the different things
right.
on the buffet. So I think part of it comes to, let's just say you want to start with caviar, and oysters. Now you've got two down, right? And then the next thing, next
smoked
five.
Smoked salmon. Grab lots of smoked salmon.
Well, we're going to stay Italian. I was going to stay Italian.
Yeah. Sardines.
Okay. You go.
No. I'm just trying to be Italian. Sardines. Go ahead.
How would you do the sardines?
I would have them just sardines that are grilled quickly on the barbecue, drizzled with a little bit of olive oil, salt, and pepper. And then just use that as one of the appetizers.
Delicious.
Delicious. A little grilled whole fish.
Mm-hmm.
A little bacalao, just, you know, fish with potato in a little cake.
Now, see, that feels next level for some people, bacalao. Bacalao is not necessarily a very common ingredient, I would say, as opposed to going to your, you know, your normal grocery store and picking up a fillet of some sort of fish. Bacalao is that dried, is it cod?
Dried cod.
Dried
cod,
yeah.
And it's nothing hard to deal with, and almost every store has it because it lasts forever,
mm-hmm.
right? So you just simply have to rehydrate it and mix it with potatoes, and you've got a potato pancake, a fish potato pancake. So simple things like that.
Yeah.
A little fillet of fish, anything, little mussels, clams, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, like a salmon mousse or any particular thing that's hard to make.
So. Not complicated necessarily, but you could also do a fish soup. You know, that's always a great idea when you have a big meal. Bring a big bowl on the table. You could do the mussel, clam, and then a little piece of cod in there, and then you'd have a wonderful fish soup to make, to put on the table. Tomato-based. That'd be easy.
Easy.
Delicious. So these questions got us thinking about some other questions people might have about cooking fish at home, since it seems to be, not unlike the wine discussion we were having earlier, a little bit intimidating. One of the questions that we often get is, how can I make my apartment slash home not smell like fish when I'm cooking fish?
Get over it. That's what I say.
That's kind of all there is to it, right?
No, it's not really. Well, there's ways of cooking fish.
All right.
So,
let's hear it.
I also think
the freshness of your fish is extremely important. You know, if you buy fish that's not necessarily very fresh, you will definitely not be able to get rid of the smell for a couple of days.
I would just disagree on that just a little bit, just because I think it's the odor comes from the pan frying and the skin, when you're frying the skin, and that's
what I was
like. If you're steaming fish, you don't get that same kind of smell.
Correct. I was going to say exactly that. Then it's the frying part that actually sticks to the wall,
mm-hmm.
not the actual smell of the fish. So even if you were making anything pan fried, like duck legs or whatever, it would definitely eventually smell into your house.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's another question for you. Are there certain types of fish that lend themselves better to specific types of cooking methods?
Hmm.
Say if you have an oilier fish versus a lean.
Yeah, so oilier fish are going to be much more prone to be grilled, to be seared, to be, you know, sauteed at high heat, where drier fish, which is like, for example, halibut, you know, it's nicer if you bake, steam, or poached, for example. It suits better that kind of meat because it doesn't have as much fat content, so it does better that way. So other than that, I think it's very important you keep your heat in check when you're doing fish. You know, you don't want to start too low, but you don't want to start too high because you don't want to crisp and burn and dehydrate the fish. Fish doesn't have much fat content in general and also doesn't have much moisture, so it's easy to get rid of the moisture of the fish, especially if you overcook it. Once you overcook a piece of fish, it becomes that pasty kind of texture, which is very not nice.
Not nice.
Very
he says.
Not nice. Oh,
very not nice. Tips for picking out fish. Are there seasons in which you want to be shopping for certain fishes?
Well, I think if you look in the grocery store, you can pretty much tell what's local and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes people shy away from things that are frozen. And I would suggest that is not really the right process to take. I would look at things that are handled properly and fisheries that are managed well. Because right now, Bristol Bay sockeye, for example, it's all frozen, but it's a delicious fishery. If it's been handled correctly,
mm-hmm.
And you trust your fishmonger, then it's a perfectly good thing to put on your table. So it's better than buying out there buying farm fish when you could be buying wild, sustainable fish that helps the fishery.
I like that. That's a hot tip.
I'm with you on that one. Absolutely.
And just for our listeners, where are you looking to find out what is the most sustainable and available fish if you want to do that support?
Monterey Bay.
Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing you should be carrying in your wallet when you're shopping.
Download the app.
Download the app, or just look at it on your phone when you're in the store.
Mm-hmm.
Very
nice.
See what's available.
Yeah, it's always up to date, and it is an app, so there's no more excuses when you're walking down the fish aisle. Oh, like, there's 10 kinds of shrimp here, and I don't really know which one to buy. I'm just going to buy this one because it's the cheapest. Well, your app right there will tell you that that is not the one you should be buying, right?
That's right. And if you're at Ballard Market, Tom Douglas might see you and call you out on it.
Up next, we have our Taste of the Week. It's going to be a delicious one, I believe. I had a really good chicken leg the other day, and I want to talk about that just because I'm not usually a fan of chicken legs.
Chicken leg.
Yeah. Just saying. I have a lot of loves and likes, and not likes.
Okay.
We'll be back after this on Chiron Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for All You Can Eat Favorite Taste of the Week. You know, one of those dishes that you just want, you kind of put it right there in your head, and I have to go back and revisit this.
Uh-huh.
I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And I had one of those this week. As a matter of fact, it was last night at the Cookbook Social.
Ooh.
There were a couple of good tastes there last night. But I really liked the one coming off the grill out front, the very first taste I had. And the reason I kind of liked it was that it reopened my eyes to chicken legs. I love thighs all day long. And breasts, to me, chicken breasts are, life's too short to eat chicken breasts, especially boneless, skinless ones.
Okay.
But chicken thighs I love. But the legs have always been kind of a weird texture for me.
Yeah, I also am not a leg fan, so I'm curious to hear what it was about these chicken legs that you love so much.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know what it was. But that's what's kind of interesting about when you get a favorite taste. So Chef Bradley from the Brave Horse Tavern was doing these legs out front of the ballroom, and he scraped them down from the kind of the knuckle joint, the knee joint.
Uh-huh.
No. What is that? That's the foot joint, right?
That's
the thigh. The leg goes up. So he scraped them down from the foot joint so that they became drumstick lollipops.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
But typically there's some. What are the little sticky parts? Tendons?
Yeah, there's like one large tendon that always runs through that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah,
but sometimes
typically
a little bone.
I didn't feel like they were present at all, so I can't imagine that he went in and cut all of those out. So I'm curious about that. And then I don't know how he got the meat to stay down. I think he must have had to wrap it or something to keep it stayed down on the thigh joint. So I'm curious about that. But it was good, and they were smoked. And when I think that... The technique that people often don't realize how much we use, Chef, and you can answer this, is that getting that food all the way prepped before you have that final fire, right? You could have done what he did 3 days in advance and then put them on the charcoal grill. They were all cooked already, and then glaze them in a little smoked honey.
Yeah, and that's the last-minute prep. I mean, that doesn't take very long to do that.
Right. Yeah.
You just have to do all the work ahead of time.
But I think sometimes people don't like to cook because they are like they're trying to get home from work and they have all this prep to do. But if you spent your Sunday, say, doing some prep for dinners throughout the week, then you're into this situation like a restaurant, a short-order cook.
Right, where you can just pull the legs out of the fridge, throw them on the barbecue, and within 20 minutes, you have dinner on the table.
Exactly. Super interesting.
I like it.
All right, Katie, how about you?
Oh, I went to the Whale Winds this weekend, and I had a very delicious little toast that, honestly, it didn't sound all that appealing to me because I'm kind of like you in this chicken leg situation, not a really big fan of beef tongue. But it was a beef tongue toast. I was like, all right, let's give this a go.
You're not a fan of it, and you ordered it. That's what I like about you, Katie.
I'm open-minded. But it was thinly shaved, which was making it a little bit more delicate than other preparations that I've had with it. And there was a puree, I want to say, of sunchoke with Dijon, and so it was a really creamy base. But what I especially liked that they put on top was sprouted lentils that they had then deep fried. So there are these little crispy, poppy little lentils on top, and it just kind of made for a nice texture of that thinly shaved beef tongue, the creamy sunchoke Dijon on that crispy toast with little lentils on top. I was a big fan. Some herbs on there as well, some tender herbs.
How was the tongue? Was it delicious?
It was delicious.
See?
10 out of 10. Would do it again.
Tina, you had one this year.
I did.
Or this week.
This week, yeah.
Welcome back from Hawaii, by the way.
Thank you. Right after Hawaii, I headed down to Portland, Oregon, and I went to this lovely new restaurant called Arden. It's right in the Pearl District. And I had a strange little treat. It was a pecorino, pumpkin seed butter, pickled squash on a little semolina toast. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was interesting to me about it was that great mix with the pickled squash and the sweetness that created like a kind of combination taste that was brand new and delicious for me.
So how was it presented? As an appetizer or with a cheese board?
It was presented almost like a dessert or, yeah, after the meal kind of thing. We had some wine, and so I just had it. And, mm-hmm. and so it was a very different way to present a little cheese board, mm-hmm. and it was so well balanced and so delicious, I fell in love with it. Now, it may not be on the menu if you go to Arden because they change it seasonally, but if you get down there anytime soon, I would highly recommend it.
All right. Arden Restaurant in Portland. Yep. Chef, how about you?
Well, the other night, I was going out with a friend of mine. We were going to go to Salare up in on 65th, and it turned out to be then they had a private party, so I was like, well, you know what? Let's go try the bar down the street. I heard you opened the bar a few months ago. Let's go try it. So we went there, and unbeknownst to me, it was their first night out. I thought they'd been open for like a few months because I've heard about that place.
Eduardo
already.
Jordan's yeah. new bar.
Eduardo Jordan opened that bar the same night. I had no idea it was the first night. Very small place, extremely intimate, very very fun place. I recommend it. And
what's
it's
the
called,
name?
It's called Lucinda, oh. and it's Lucinda, and it's on 65th. It's right next to June Baby. If you've heard of June Baby, it's right next door. Mm-hmm. And extremely beautiful little menu put together. One of the series on the menus is a grain bowl. And I had a red wheat berry with a Berber meatball that were absolutely fantastic. They were beef meatball. And, of course, I had to try the harissa. A bit hot for me. Ooh, it was nice, but it was definitely hot and spicy, as a harissa could be. And anyway, that was my taste of the week. It was absolutely delicious. Everything I had on the menu there on the first night, total surprise, was delicious. Hmm. So I recommend it.
Lucinda up on 65th.
And Lucinda was there. I can't remember the relation between Eduardo and Lucinda, but Lucinda was there.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So. Speaking of harissa, I bought a tube of harissa. You know, I've been trying to buy more tubes of things. Because when you buy a jar, it's you know, even if you keep it in the fridge, it's exposed to the oxygen that much longer. And with a tube, you can squeeze the product right up to the tip. And so I now have a tube of chipotle paste, a tube, so not in a can anymore. Mm-hmm. Tube of harissa, not in a jar anymore.
You can buy mustard that way, too.
Mustard, tomato paste,
yep.
Ginger, anchovy, all in
tubes.
Would you
do ginger, too?
Oh, yeah.
You're
Ooh,
a regular astronaut at this point.
It kind of feels just like the baby food that you suck out of a...
When I grew up, that's the way most of the stuff you would buy, like tomato paste, mayonnaise, or whatever, it was all in tubes.
That did not happen here until
more No, it's very interesting. It didn't happen here.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Seems like to me. All right, what's in your fridge? This is a very loved segment, and we haven't done it for a while, so we're going to check out a few of our Facebook watchers and find out what's in their fridge, and then maybe we'll share some of our own on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time to find out what's in your fridge on Cairo Radio, the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're here for another 45 minutes or so, so don't miss out. We've still got Joel Gamarin coming in of Getting Scrappy Now, both the TV show and the
book.
The book, yeah. And then also we have Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia.
That's right.
To wrap up the show. So stay with us. Okay, what's in your fridge, KDO?
What's in your fridge? This is where we go back to the internet. We go back to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, and we ask you, what is in your fridge? We used to do this segment quite often, and for whatever reason, we stopped doing it, but now we're back again, and everyone needs help. So much in those fridges. So
I think it's a Thanksgiving issue. Like, everyone buys so much stuff they don't need for the holiday, and then all of a sudden it's all left in their fridge.
Well, it's been a few weeks now.
I was going to say, that's really desperate. I feel like maybe...
I still have a bag of spinach in my fridge from Thanksgiving.
How's it looking?
Oddly enough, it's nuclear. It's fine.
It's fine. It can stand anything as long as it's in the fridge. All right, so we like to do this by giving one of you a fridge to tackle. Terry, you're the first up since you are the consummate pro when it comes to using all the things in the fridge. Catherine wants to know what to do with leftover roast chicken, baby spinach, a head of cauliflower, and a big bag of clementines. And she says, oh, and bacon. And bacon.
Saved by the gong. But definitely render your bacon, because you have to do that. You can't eat bacon raw. So render your bacon. Mm-hmm. Use some of the fat to make a little dressing with the clementine juice. And then take the only use a little bit of the clementine, and then use the rest segment and make a salad with sauteed spinach. But sauteed spinach really quickly in the pan. Just a drop of olive oil. Saute the spinach like 1, 2, 3. Put that in a bowl so it's just wilted. Little clementine, bacon, and what's the other thing they have? Oh, cauliflower. Shave the cauliflower and put them raw in there. That would be delicious with the leftover roasted chicken. And then you make a clementine dressing with the bacon fat and a little bit of the clementine juice, salt and pepper, and you're home.
Sounds delicious. The clementine thing reminded me of I happen to have a lamb shoulder in my fridge that had been sitting there for a couple of weeks. I bought it at the meat store when I picked up my turkey from Don and Joe's, but it's in cryovac, so it could last a month or so. Anyway, I had a bunch of clementines that were getting dried out on the counter, and I put the whole shoulder in a Le Creuset, my big Le Creuset, and I just surrounded it with the clementines and just cooked the lamb with the clementines, mm-hmm. or the satsumas, I think they were. It came out really good, because
Softened down.
That juice caramelized to the bottom, so I had this kind of bitter orange flavor.
Nice.
Super good.
Yeah.
Yummy.
All right. Tom, this fridge is for you. This is Cheryl's. She's got short ribs, cranberries, lemon, celery, onion, red wine, a lot of mustards, it seems, pomegranate molasses, cream, ricotta, and eggs. A lot of options there.
Maybe I should have written that down.
Putting on
okay.
the readers.
Cheryl Roger Osbim.
That's right.
You have a fine fridge, is all I got to say. Well, short ribs, I'm not sure what form they're in, if they're pre-cooked or not.
Let's say they're raw.
Mm-hmm. And are they the Korean style cut across the bone, or are they the flanken style, which is like the big chunk
of short ribs? Yeah, let's say it's a big chunk. Let's pretend that it's bone in... short ribs,
well,
raw.
She's got everything to make a beautiful braised short rib.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking.
With cranberry mustard. I would mm-hmm. take the cranberries, cook them down, and then stir in mustard to that, so you get that like a mostarda out of your cranberries. All the celery, the onions, and that kind of thing is done. The cream and ricotta and eggs. It sounds to me like that's a separate meal. I would mm-hmm. just stay out of that business. And just make that delicious red wine braised short ribs with cranberry mostarda, and I think I would be very happy.
That sounds great.
Never mind. I was going to say, with the cream and the ricotta and the eggs, you could make a little flan with the pomegranate seeds in there.
Mm-hmm.
That would be delicious.
Or you can make a gnocchi to go with your short rib.
Oh, gnocchi. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Yeah.
That's a next level fridge right there.
I just don't like adding cream much to short ribs. They're so rich.
Yeah.
Right? So...
all that good gelatin. All right, Thierry, this is Katie's fridge, not me, a different Katie. Pickled whole beets, bacon, again, pesto, and kale. She says, good luck. So it makes me feel like that's all that's in there.
I hate to break you the news, Katie, but the good luck is on your side, not on my side. You're the one who has to eat that.
Well, what would you do with it?
Pickled beets. I would probably take some of the pickling juice. I would render the bacon. I would mix the pesto. She's probably, I would look in the pantry. She probably has some pasta that I would add to this. If she has some pasta, boil some pasta. Start with the pasta base. But I would roast the kale in the oven, 400 to 450 degrees, a little bit of olive oil, salt, pepper. And I would use the pesto to go with the bacon into the pasta and the diced pickled beets. So you have a little acid from the pickled beets. And you have sweetness from the pesto, kind of sweet from the pesto, and put that all over on top of a big pasta, and you have a big bowl of pasta.
A big bowl of pasta. Can I ask you all a question? What's in your fridges right now? Apparently some ancient spinach in Tom's, mm-hmm. but what else do you have in there?
It was actually from King Tut's tomb, the spinach. I've been preserving it. What's in my fridge? Well, I finally finished. I have some lamb shoulder left from that beautiful clementine lamb roast that I made. We got the last of the butter crunch squash from the farm, which I made a squash curry from the other night. So that's still around with coconut milk. And That's about it for fresh things. I always keep, you know, little fresh veggies and stuff in the fridge.
Are you good about eating your leftovers?
I am.
That's good.
My wife is not.
She only likes it when it's fresh on day one?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Terry, what's in your fridge right now?
We have a bunch of leftovers from, we had dinner at Lark. It was Kathy's birthday and we went to Lark. We have like 5 or 6 boxes left, probably each one of the dish because we had so many dishes. So we have a bunch of food in there that she's going to enjoy probably today. And aside from that, there is a piece of cake that I made. And milk, dairy, obviously butter, eggs, coconut milk is in there too. And for protein, we have a little bit of a soup, chicken soup, with the carcasses of a chicken in there because we've already ate the chicken. And that's about the extent of
that.
And vegetables, of course.
Yeah, sounds like a good fridge. All right, we have time for one person that I think needs a lot of help. They say so much by help, exclamation point. I have 2 pounds of meatloaf mix, ground beef and pork, lots of frozen veggies or canned whatever, 2 potatoes, fresh spinach, and 1 green pepper.
Well, my first thing off the top of my head was this weekend I made my own gyros mix. So typically with ground lamb, garlic, Greek oregano, salt and pepper. But this would make a beautiful base for making that same kind of gyros. So you can make your own G-Y-R-O-S, right?
Yeah. Not hero so, like the sandwich.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is like the...
But gyro, like the Greek sandwich.
Like the Greek sandwich,
yes.
Exactly.
Got it.
So
like
anyway, so
sub.
You cook that off in a roast pan. You slice it thin, just like it's coming off the vertical rotisserie that you see it on in stores.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's got fresh spinach. That would be great. You can either put it over a spinach salad, or you could cure your 1 green pepper that she has in chili paste and use that as a garnish for your gyros. If you happen to have some pita in your freezer, like I always keep Greek pita in my freezer. So that's what I would do with the ground meat left over.
Right. And if she has canned frozen vegetables, she probably has a little puff pastry now. I would do like a pot pie.
Of course she does.
A beef pot pie.
Tom is laughing because he's like, who just always has puff pastry?
If you don't, you should.
Hot
but anyway, a little pot pie would be also a nice little dish to make with all those canned and frozen vegetables with the ground beef and the potato and add the spinach raw in there. The whole thing will cook together, and you'd have a wonderful stew on your hand.
Or shepherd's pie, because you have the potatoes. You make little mashed potatoes on top.
Yeah.
For a little shepherd's pie with the spinach and meat. All right, Joel Gammerin's coming up. He's the author of Cooking Scrappy and, of course, the TV show of the same name. And we're going to talk to him about his new book on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen, and you're smack dab in the middle of it, coming to you from the Hot Stove Society here in downtown Seattle. We have an array of Getting Scrappy books that are out in the marketplace this year.
Yeah, it seems to be a 2018-19 trend.
Our good friend Joel Gammerin is here. He has got a new book called Cooking Scrappy, 100 Recipes to Help You Stop Wasting Food, Save Money, and Love What You Eat. Which is a good combo, because you can do all that kind of saving and scrap reducing, but if it's terrible when you get done, it's not going to help much.
You're not going to eat it.
Very true.
You're going to waste some good ingredients on bad then, right?
Exactly.
You don't want to do that. So, Joel, what's the amazing fad that's going on here? And I don't want to call it a fad, but I think it's more of a learning curve of how to not waste so much of what we spend big bucks for at the grocery store.
Well, okay. So, first of all, I'm the head chef for Sur La Table. We've got 83 cooking schools across the country, and I was in one of teaching a class, and I realized I was looking at our trash bowls overfilled with shrimp shells, cucumber seeds that we scooped out for some sauce, potato peels, and I was thinking, you guys know, I mean, Terry and Tom, you know, as chefs, we throw nothing away. We throw absolutely nothing away because that's profit in the restaurant industry. But at home, there's a huge disconnect. No one got taught what we were taught in kitchens or culinary school. And so it felt like a good mission, and it turned into a TV show, which we're in our second season,
good
and my
you.
First cookbook. So we're pretty pumped.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what's your background now? I remember talking to you when you were a youngster Palace Kitchen.
Yes. You two have a history.
We got a history. So that day, by the way, Tom, I don't know if I've ever told you this, I was pumping gas in my car. I was so nervous to meet you because you're a legend. So are you, Deary? And You were gracious enough to give me a half hour, and I was going to ask you about the restaurant industry. I spilled gas all over myself.
Really?
I pulled out the nozzle too early.
I thought you ate beans the night before.
I smelled terrible, but I came in, and you were awesome, and you let me pick your brain. So, you know, I worked in a lot of kitchens in Italy and also in San Francisco. Realized the restaurant wasn't really my thing. I really loved teaching and being around people. And discovered Sur La Table when I was in my early 20s, and now 10 years later, I'm their national chef. I moved to New York for the past 8 years, just moved back to Seattle. I've been doing a lot of media and just kind of really trying to inspire people to cook. But the Scrappy Mission really started about 4 or 5 years ago when I met Katie Couric on one of her shows in New York. And she got involved as an executive producer, which was really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought you worked with Martha for a while, too.
She would destroy me. Yes. I wouldn't last a day, Tom.
Wouldn't last a day. Okay, so let's jump right into some recipes people might be surprised about.
Yes.
When it comes to cooking Scrappy.
Well, I was excited about seeing you guys get competitive about the wine, so I thought it'd be kind of cool if I threw out a scrap,
okay,
and you guys tell me what you would make with that scrap.
All right.
Let's see if I can stump you.
Oh, I like this game a lot.
Are you in on it?
Kitty, you loving this?
I like to view what happens.
Don't let her lie. She is very competitive.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll throw one last one at her on the
end. We'll throw one last one.
We'll see.
You can judge.
Okay.
So I'll start easy, okay? What would you do with a corn cob without the kernels on it, like a naked corn cob?
Soup. Easy.
Yeah, it's easy. We make stocks with that. We just boil that with water, and then now you have a corn stock, which you can use in a soup.
Absolutely. It's
absolutely delicious.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You can also infuse it in brown butter or butter and make a really beautiful corn butter, which is really nice.
Oh,
you can toss that on lobster or crab or something like that, which would be really sweet.
Is there any way to eat that cob? Have you figured that out?
No, but a lot of people use it as kindling.
Kindling.
Is that weird? They throw it in the fire. It actually burns pretty good.
Huh.
Okay, you ready for the next one?
Yes.
All right, next one is, what would you do, let's just think about it, with the pea pod shells? So after you shell the peas, what would you do with those shells?
I would boil them, and I would make a wonderful puree out of that. I would put in my Vitamix. No advertising. I don't own the company.
It almost seems like you do with all the name drops.
But you need a fast blender. You need something that's, you know, pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Blend the heck out of it and then strain it. And then you have this wonderful pea puree. And it's actually a pretty intense flavor.
Yeah.
The pod is much more intense than the actual pea.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure you use that correctly. But you take that and you could use it as a sauce for a fish or you could use it as a soup.
I love that.
Yeah.
Tom, what about you?
I probably, in my first off in my head, was using it as a base in a steamer, like you might use lettuce or something else when you're steaming
That's
a piece
super
of fish
smart. That's cool.
Or something where you get the fragrance off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they have to be awfully, awfully fragrant to get much.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's a smart idea.
These guys are good.
Who won that round, Katie?
You know, it was pretty inventive, that steamer idea, but I feel like actually being able to eat it is pretty, pretty cool, too. What would you do with those pods?
So I did a really gorgeous salad, but you can char them on the outside. And obviously, they're super edible, but if you just blacken them in like a cast iron skillet with some really hot olive oil, they get that really sweet flavor. And so I toss them with some soba noodles, some sesame seeds, and some radishes, and they're beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Have you tried that with fava bean pods also?
I don't think those are edible. Are they edible?
Yeah, they're edible, for
no
sure.
No way. Are you serious?
Yeah.
They better be young and tender.
Yes, just young ones.
Yeah.
Blanch them and throw them straight on the charcoal grill.
I had no idea.
Because
they're such a pain in the butt to shell favas, and so you feel like it's such a loss for all those. Have you ever had the fava leaves?
Yes, of course, those are
insane.
Those are good.
They're a little furry.
Yeah. But they're delicious.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to go to a really hard one. You ready? What would you do with a peach pit?
I would put it in a bottle of vodka and wait for December and have a wonderful peach vodka. This is all delicious.
Yes.
Pits are really good to make infused alcohol. They're very delicious because you don't get that. I mean, obviously, nobody wants to take a pit and try cracking it.
Yeah.
But if you gently crack it and put it in vodka, man, it's like by December, you've got this wonderful nectar.
That's awesome. Mm.
Yeah.
Tom?
I'd put it in the mortar and pestle and make a little facial scrub with it. A defoliator.
So dry.
I was wondering, Tom.
Defoliator. Really come on.
Tom, I was wondering why your face looked like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's where this redness comes from.
You need to take the shell out.
Some people thought it was gin. It turns out to be peach pits.
I love it. That's awesome. So we do it, Terry, exactly. You can make the simple syrup like you were talking about in the earlier segment. One-to-one sugar to water, yep. Boil the peach pits, and it gives this really almondy, kind of toasty yep. flavor. And I think this is like the story of the book is these are ingredients we all have, right? Yeah. We have corn cobs. We've got pea shells. We've got peach pits. And, you know, these are just flavors that maybe people haven't tried before. So it's not asking you to go find a crazy ingredient or go somewhere outside the house. It's saying just look at the ingredient a little bit differently. Look at it whole.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of reminds me a bit of how we used to think about certain cuts of meat being the prime cuts of the meat.
Right.
And that everyone else who had maybe less money or had to do with what was left over would use kind of the nastier bits of food. But in fact, it's a bit of a misconception, and the same goes with all of these vegetables that we're bringing to the fore, right? You can use everything. Everything is perfectly delicious. We've just kind of been conditioned to think that some bits of the plant are better than other bits.
I mean, I totally agree with you, Katie. Do you guys remember when hanger steak was, like, not a good cut?
Well, it was always the chef's cut. It's what it was always called.
But that was, like, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And now it's, like, $25 a pound. Mm-hmm. And so that's an example of a scrap or something that, you know, I'm sure at some point celery root was, you know, a scrap. No one wanted it. They wanted the celery. And then
It's still a pretty obscure vegetable to most.
Exactly. But at least it's at grocery stores, you know. And so, I don't know, when kale stems start to become cool and, you know, all these different parts of the vegetables that are not cool, that's when I think the mission is over, but we're not there yet.
I think a more recent version of that very same thing is like chard, right?
Yeah.
Where everyone used to just kind of scrape the leaves off the outside, mm-hmm. throw away the stems, and now the stems are all roasted separately, and they're delicious, and they add a crunch to the creamy charred leaves.
Yeah. And what I was going to say is it's not just about ingredients, the book. I mean, it's also about looking at your kitchen and what can you use, you know, what's the underdog. So, like, you know, for example, everyone gets a pizza stone to make pizza. But there's a whole recipe in here about how to turn over your Le Creuset and use the bottom of the pot as a pizza stone. And so it's this idea that, you know, get scrappy in the kitchen is not just about the ingredients. It's about pushing yourself to the edge as well.
Where can people find or watch your TV show?
Okay, so the show is on Hulu, and it airs on A&E. Actually, this Saturday is our 8th episode of the 2nd season. Jacques Pepin and I, for 30 minutes, attack Connecticut, and it is a badass episode.
Yeah.
It is awesome. Yeah, cool. We go fishing for minnows. So A&E, 9 a.m. on the mornings, and then Hulu is where you can find both seasons.
Nice. The book is called Cookin' Scrappy, Joel Gamron. And you are the chef for Sur La Table, and there are 83 cooking schools around the country. Which is, do you have to travel that much? Do you actually give classes in those schools sometimes?
Yeah. I teach a lot. I travel a ton. Mm-hmm. But it feels good to be back in the Pacific Northwest and lead from SeaTac. So. Well.
And, of course, your sister, who's went to school with my daughter, are good buddies and is now married.
Yes.
It's just funny they're getting old.
I know, man. So are we.
All right. Up next, it's Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia. And we're going to be right back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia on the Seattle Kitchen Show right here at the Hot Stove Society. And my name is Chef Tom Douglas. My name is not Chef Tom Douglas. My name is Tom Douglas. I am a chef, author, restaurateur here in downtown Seattle.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, owner of Luke in Madison Valley, and Lule downtown Seattle at the bottom of the Sheraton. Also, just released a line of fragrances called Lule.
Called Lule.
Check it out, Chef in the Hat, fragrances.com.
It's a beautiful song you just said. And I'm Katie O, your co-host, and Molly Moon's ice cream seller extraordinaire.
You're back from Kauai?
Yeah, I'm back from Kauai. I'm the producer of this program and owner of Large Media.
Your teammates did a fine job while you were on the lam.
I think probably a lot better than I do normally.
Well, let's not get into that.
Okay, let's not. Yes, let's not. You guys, it's time for our favorite thing, our tasty trivia challenge. Here's how the game works. Each of you will get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner, and they don't have to give anything away. But if you get the least amount of answers correct, you're the loser, and you have to give something away to a fan of our show. Today, you'll be playing for Kelly McCullough Offshack, who went over to our Facebook page and shared with you all what was in her refrigerator, and you made something quite delicious out of that. Chef Thierry, if you lose this illustrious game, what will you give away to Miss Carrie?
I think I'm going to give a brunch for two at Luc.
Wonderful prize.
On a Saturday or Sunday, come down to Madison Valley and enjoy brunch for two.
Lovely. Miss Katie O, what happens if you lose?
If I lose, Kelly can have some hot fudge and some sprinkles and a $50 gift card to Molly Moon's, and she can pick herself up some pints or have a couple scoops and share it with friends, whatever she wants.
Delicious. Chef Tom Douglas.
Well, it's the last moment to be ordering your Christmas goods from the Dahlia Bakery.
Nice.
So I'm going to give a $100 gift card to the Dahlia Bakery.
Whoa, that's so much bread.
But you have to pre-order. Remember, if you walk in, it might not have what you want. So you need to pre-order your pies or your dessert or your log.
Your
Yule log.
Your Yule log.
Our gluten-free Yule log.
Yeah.
It's hard to say for me.
Gluten-free.
You'll be happy if you order our Yule log.
Say it three times, you log.
No, can't do it.
Okay, great. How about we start this game then?
Okay. Yeah.
Who would like to go first?
I'll do.
All right, Chef. You can use a tulip bulb as a substitute in a recipe that calls for what?
Onions?
Yes. Nicely done. Onions. Of course.
Who has extra tulip bulbs lying around but not an onion?
Dig one out of your yard.
I was trying to put that into a thoughts of like your celery is full of tulip bulb, not onions, but that didn't work out very well.
Chef, the smallest type of liquor glass is called a what?
Smallest? A shot?
No, a cordial.
It's something that makes you very nice. You're cordial.
Oh, we got it.
Cordial.
Yes, I should have known that.
I, too, would have said a shot glass.
Yeah. All right, Chef Thierry, so your third question. 75% of industrial accidents happen to people who have done what? I'll give you some options here. Cut a bagel, eaten breakfast, sliced a pizza.
I'm going to go with sliced a pizza. That sounds like the most common one.
The answer is actually
eaten breakfast.
Breakfast. I tried to trick you with the bagel because I knew that wasn't.
That bagel is really tricky.
I know. I thought the bagel was too obvious.
Yeah. Industrial accidents happen eating breakfast. I don't know what people are doing.
Industrial accent? Oh, that's crazy.
Chef, your question number four. What company produced an electric rice cooker as its first product? Was it Sony, Black & Decker, or KitchenAid?
Sony.
Correct. Nicely done.
Why?
Two correct and two incorrect. Here you go. Your last question, Chef Thierry. Mung bean sprouts are usually the sprouts used in what type of cooking?
Chinese cooking?
Yes. Good job. That's 3 out of 5. More correct than incorrect, Chef. All right, Katie, are you next?
Sure.
Katie, nuts are the most common what? Cookie ingredient, thing people choke on, or food allergen?
I thought the egg was actually the most common food allergen, but I would say in this question, out of those three options, it is the allergen.
That is correct. It is the allergen. I made up the others.
Mm, you did a good job. Especially the cookie ingredient one.
I mean, right?
Why not?
Who would have thought?
You don't know.
Super tricky.
Sure.
Katie, the only flavor of Jell-O that contains fruit is what flavor? Would you like some choices?
Yeah.
Cranberry, lime, or cherry?
My initial thought was lime, so I'm going to go with lime.
The answer is cranberry.
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 Mm.
Farina is Italian for what?
Flour.
Correct. This is a fun one. You ready? Super fun.
Super fun. Love fun ones.
Miss Katie, Casanova ate 50 what each morning to increase his potency?
No choices on that,
which
huh?
Which is different than his impotency.
Right. I'm going to say some huevos, some eggs.
Nope. Oh. Any guesses in the audience?
Oysters.
Oysters.
Whoa.
Gross.
Get it? Because they're an aphrodisiac. Katie, what is another name for carambola? Orange, mango, or starfruit?
I'm going to just say a mango.
The answer is starfruit.
Starfruit?
Katie.
You knew that? Tom, you're so smart.
Oh. Not really, but I knew that one.
Let's see how you do with your 5 out of 5.
All right, Terry is winning right now with 3 correct answers.
Or trolling
Katie's not far behind with 2. Tom, 2 is the number to beat. All right, Tom. The Chinese translation of what fruit means moons of the faithful? Apricot, cherry, or orange?
Orange.
The answer is apricot. Yeah.
But you said it with a lot of confidence.
So, a lot of confidence in that one. All right, Chef Tom Douglas.
I love
Douglas.
When Tom does that.
What do McDonald's and Burger King put on their French fries to give them a brown color?
Sugar.
Correct. Tom, what is a winter banana? A variety of what?
I would say a winter banana is a... I have no idea. An apple.
Yeah, it is. Apple, good job. Tom, this is a fun one. There are only 2 3-letter herbs, and rue is one. What's the other one? Anybody know?
Somebody is putting it on their chin.
It's not on. It's not. That's not where this is found.
I have no idea.
Anybody?
Bay.
Bay. Yeah. Yes.
No. I got that wrong.
Oh, everyone Terry. Just.
Terry. It's like you should have said Elliot.
Oh, this is very close. It's Katie and Tom are now tied for 2 each. You each have 2. Tom, you have to get this right to win. What does Moussaka literally mean?
It means king of the jungle.
No. Nope.
Oh, that's Mustafa.
Yes,
never
Mustafa.
Mind.
Okay. I like that. Mustafa.
Tom, we can't take you anywhere.
This funny. Is clearly the
What's
end
wrong
of
with
the
being
show.
Witty?
That was a good one.
Witty?
I liked that one.
No. I have no idea.
Somebody way back there enjoyed that, though. The answer is moistened.
Moistened.
The answer is
All right.
Moistened. So Terry is the winner today.
Congratulations, Chef.
Katie and Tom have tied for the loser position.
Being the winner at 3 shows a very low level of...
do you want a question off?
Oh, yes, of course.
To see who's the true loser in this bunch? All right.
Okay, Katie, you and me.
You and me.
All right.
Let's do this.
There is one food that all races eat. What is it?
Rice?
It's bread.
It's bread.
Bread.
Loser, you are a loser.
Loser, but Kelly is a winner because she's going to get some hot fudge and sprinkles and ice cream.
If you want to be part of the show, you can go send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3, in case we hadn't said that 50 times during the show. This show is produced by Tina Noll at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz, who did a fabulous job while Tina was on vacation. And our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. It includes breakfast. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher or Apple Podcast, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.
Yay!